Good morning. It's March 18th. Chilly air is back in New York City. And this is your Indignity Morning Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Skoka, taking a look at the day and the news. Politico magazine is reporting this morning that a poll that it ran, along with Ipsos, found, to Politico's expressed surprise, that if Donald Trump is convicted in his criminal trial in Manhattan for falsifying business records, that would hurt him with voters. More than a third of independents, Politico reports, said a guilty verdict would make them less likely to support Trump's candidacy. In a close race, that might matter. Politico goes on, it also cuts against the conventional wisdom, as analysts have sometimes doubted the political impact of the prosecution in Manhattan. Maybe Politico should check up on who it's been getting its conventional wisdom from? Who had really convinced themselves that a potential criminal conviction was not going to affect a politician's standing? Maybe instead of talking to those analysts as the year wears on, they should just check back in with the random people they polled. Politico also reports that the poll found that a whopping 70% of the country rejects Trump's claim that presidents should be immune from prosecution for alleged crimes they committed while in office. Less than a quarter of the respondents, meanwhile, said that they trust the Supreme Court to issue a fair and nonpartisan ruling on the matter. The public's political analysis skills are not doing so badly this morning. While we're looking at the question of whether Donald Trump is supernaturally immune to normal political cause and effect, page one of the Times has Trump hurries to catch Biden in race for campaign money. That's backed up on page A14 by Biden campaign's haul fuels cash advantage over Republican funds. Does it matter that Donald Trump is broke? Does it matter that the newly empowered Trump faction at the Republican National Committee did mass layoffs? Is organic fame and or notoriety going to combine with the ineffable unpopularity of Joe Biden to allow a disorganized political party, low on money, to mount a successful presidential campaign? Maybe. But below that on page one is a Ruth Graham story that's looking at how right-wing evangelical political culture is dealing with being mired in sin and vulgarity. It opens with an anecdote about how the conservative dad's Real Women of America 2024 pinup calendar, published, Graham writes, by a woke-free beer company, hastily launched last year as an alternative to Bud Light, was clearly meant to provoke liberals. But when photos of it began circulating online in December, progressives did not pay much attention. Instead, it sparked a heated squabble on the right over whether conservative dads who happen to be Christians should reject the calendar on moral grounds or embrace it as an irreverent win for the good guys. Fascism is inherently incoherent, and it derives some of its power from that. But the right wing seems completely incapable at the moment of not turning on itself over questions of purity and righteousness. Is that going to matter in November? Who knows? Sure seems like something, though. In a triumphant example of the power of politics to smooth over bad optics and policy shortfalls, Vladimir Putin was re-elected president of Russia with 87% of the vote, his biggest majority yet. Most of the top of page one in the Times is taken up by a lurid picture of hellish red clouds billowing over Reykjavik as the volcanoes in Iceland's Reykjanes Peninsula went into a new round of eruptions on Saturday night. Inside the paper, on page A10, there's a truly magnificent photo of a rift in the earth nearly 2 miles long with what looks like flame coming out of it and smoke rising from the flame and immense lava flows spider-webbed with glowing streaks spreading out on either side of it. Excellent volcano action. Very rewarding to stare at from the safe distance of the newspaper. Also on page A10, fittingly with no photograph, Niger orders 1,000 U.S. Armed Forces personnel to leave the country. The military junta that's been in control since July ordered the U.S. to remove its troops after France already withdrew its troops, throwing, the Times writes, the United States' strategy in the region into disarray. Remember when the Green Berets got killed in Niger? And even with that, we sort of never talked about what we were doing there or why. Apparently we were doing counterterrorism efforts against jihadist groups in West Africa, as the Times describes it. In addition to 1,000 troops, we had a six-year-old, $110 million airbase. A military spokesperson for Niger said the American presence in the territory of the Republic of Niger is illegal, and that, the Times writes, the U.S. military presence violates all the constitutional and democratic rules which would require the sovereign people, notably through its elected officials, to be consulted on the installation of a foreign army on its territory. Also, kind of the reverse of that on our end, really. Remember the big debate in Congress about our war in Niger? Me neither. Elsewhere on page one, the Times tries to make the shooting last week on the A train, in which one passenger started a fight with another and ended up getting stabbed and then shot with his own gun, into something weightier than a Metro crime story, making it about discourse and vibes. The encounter, the Times writes, came just over a week after New York's governor took the extraordinary step of ordering the National Guard below ground to make the trains feel safer. The shooting undermined the city's message that riding the subway is, statistically speaking, quite safe. The episode fueled a sense of futility about a system that seems to catch all the troubles from the city above, mental health crises, illegal guns, and squeeze them into crowded steel tubes. It's not even wrong, exactly. It's true that the vibes are ambiently bad, that there's a lot of free-floating anger and hostility and desperation, and that it really does stink to be in a subway car or on a subway platform when it happens to flare up. Still, the conjunction of sort of dead timesy's metaphor fueled a sense of futility, with the attempted poetic defamiliarization of the familiar squeezes them into crowded steel tubes. Blech. Just write about the shooting. Don't write about the shooting. And the lead news story on page one, energy appetite in U.S. endangers goals on climate. Do tell. Electric vehicles need electricity, and data centers continue to devour huge amounts of natural resources, and will do so even more as incredibly useless, unbelievably energy-intensive artificial intelligence is deployed everywhere to make every possible product and experience worse. How should we do the sign-up sheet for the Butlerian Jihad? Probably not a Google Doc. That is the news. Thank you for listening. Please subscribe to Indignity to keep us going. And if all goes well, we will talk again tomorrow.